This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Hey, I love when I get your calls, when I get your emails. I just love when you interact with me. So you should do it more. If you want to call and ask a question, leave a comment, give me your opinion, an idea for a guest, you can call our 24-hour voicemail line at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. So today is a little bit of a departure. Apparently, you can learn new things, people. And this is something I've actually never talked about on the show. And it's not usually in my wheelhouse, but we're going to talk about a sort of sci-fi fantasy novel. And the reason that it caught my eye is because it has an amazing title, which is called The Fifth Gender. And someone had posted about it on my social media feed. I forget which one. I saw the cover. I saw what they said about it. And I was like, oh my God, I have to read this book. Even though in my leisure reading, as well as reading for work, I very rarely read science fiction. Like I read it like 0.5 times a year, meaning one book in 2 years, if that. So this is totally new territory for me, which is exciting. And of course, there's sex and gender involved, so have no fear. But let me tell you about the author, because she's kind of a big deal. Gail Carriger has multiple New York Times bestsellers and over a million books in print in dozens of different languages. She writes comedies of manners mixed with urban fantasy and sexy queer joy as G.L. Carriger. Her best-known books include the Parasol Protectorate and Finishing School series. She was once an archaeologist and is fond of shoes, octopuses, and tea. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Gail.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be your fiction temptation for the year.
You're my fantasy fiction. Yeah, you're my fantasy fiction. Like this is like not my thing, right? I know tons of people who love this genre, who are major fans, and it's just like nothing's ever sort of grabbed me in a way that I was like, oh, I've got to read this. But, you know, The Fifth Gender, come on. That was like catnip for me.
Yay!
Okay, so you've written a ton of books. So like this is me like finding you, you know, mid-career. You've got what you call a steampunk parasolverse, which contains multiple series.
Yes.
The Parasol Protectorate features a proper Victorian spinster who has no soul. And you have a YA Finishing School series. The Supernatural Society novellas follow popular LGBTQ side characters from the Parasolverse as they strike out on their own. There's urban fantasy in an alternative Victorian England. There's werewolves. And of course, nothing would be complete without gay shapeshifters.
It's true.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, what makes an archaeologist take this turn and say, forget about these old bones. I want to write fantasy and sci-fi.
Well, I always wrote fiction on the side. I grew up in a kind of off-grid, hippy-dippy, commune sort of situation. Not really, but sort of. And it was full of artists and full of beat poets and writers, and none of them ever had any money. So I basically was like, I love writing, but I will never make a living as a writer. It doesn't seem like a sensible career to
me. Career choice, right.
So then I went off and became an academic because that's so smart and lucrative, but it seemed more sensible to me. But I never stopped writing. And once I wrote things, I just figured I might as well submit them because why not? And I just kept doing that. And then I wrote Soulless 10 years ago, right about now, actually. Mm. It was when my first book came out, and I just submitted it like I did everything else, and it was sort of the little book that could. It was this crazy mashup of different genres. I thought nobody would want it. I thought it wouldn't sell, and it was just this little sensation that took off and gave me a whole new career.
You got lots of awards for it.
Yeah, it was startling because it's really, I write very lighthearted, gentle, joy-filled stuff. One of the things I like to do, and one of the things I've come around to after a decade, is giving all of my queer babies happy endings, because I feel like so often we don't get them in real life. So
right.
Go forth and give them the fantasies that they deserve. And generally speaking, you know, comedies of manners, which is essentially what I do in many different forms, don't tend to whip people up into a frenzy of delight and win awards and stuff. So it was very startling to me that Soulless was as successful as it was. And it basically gave me a career. And I kept the two jobs for a while. And eventually the book side of my life just took over. And so I gave up academia.
Well, you're also incredibly prolific. In 10 years, you seem to have a million books.
It's about 25, 26, somewhere in the mid-20s. Yeah, I write fast, but I also feel like it's my job to give people stories that they love. And so I have to do that primarily. That's my work. So I treat it like work. I very much enjoy it, don't get me wrong. But I do feel like I owe my readers and my fans something for giving me this great career that I love. And that seems to be more stories.
Yes. Okay. So I want to tell people about this book, The Fifth Gender. The book copy says it's a sci-fi queer romance meets cozy mystery featuring a hot cop, the most adorable purple alien ever, and a race with five genders. You've described it as an alien police procedural space porn. The basic plot is that Tristel lives in exile, but he's built a life for himself aboard a human space station. He's begun to understand the complex nuances of human courting rituals. Detective Hastian is finally flirting back with him, except that Tristel's beloved space station is unexpectedly contacted by the Galloi, a xenophobic species with five genders, purple skin, and serious attitude. They need the help of a human detective because there is a murderer aboard their spaceship. Murder is so rare that the Galloi don't even have a word for it. And so the two of them must solve the case together.
Yes, and Tristel's kind of recruited by, he's an attaché. He's a like a cultural attaché. His species is particularly good at learning about other and not offending. So Tristel's sort of recruited because he actually is a Galloi. He's just one of their exiles.
Which is really interesting because you would think, well, if he's one of them, he'll be able to talk to them and stuff. But once you're exiled from that planet, they actually consider you like non-existent.
Yeah, you're an outcast in sort of the original caste system definition of the word, in that like you're untouchable and unknowable to a certain extent. Yeah.
It's basically like Scientology, really. I want to give people a taste of this because it's really good. And it's also, besides in print, it's in audiobook form. So before we go to the break, I want you to hear this little excerpt of The Fifth Gender. Here we go.
There was some kind of commotion in the Hawker Center. This was annoying, as Dre was hungry and technically off duty. All he wanted was ramen and bed. The commotion was at the ramen stall, and at the center of it was, no surprise to Dre, Tristel Zeiga. Since he'd moved aboard the station, Mr. Zeiga had been a thorn in Dre's side. Of course, everyone adored Mr. Zeiga. Dre also adored him. That was part of the problem. Mr. Zeiga, and Dre would think of him that way or die trying, was Galloway. So, of course, everyone adored him. Considering how few Galloway moved off-planet, the station was incredibly lucky to have one in residence. There was something about Galloway. They comforted by their very presence. They were friendly and amusing and fun and generous. They were charming and smart, eager to learn about others, all qualities any space station would want on their payroll. Also, a Galloway off Gaul was a certified exile with no possibility of ever returning, thus entirely lacking in planetary allegiance. This made them the perfect neutral party, a major political asset. Everyone liked a Galloway. Everyone on Station XO-17 loved Mr. Zeiga. Dre avoided him like a Doreen megaplague. Yet Mr. Zeiga always seemed to be in trouble, or in the middle of some dramatic emotional crisis over flower petals, or causing a ruckus with noodles, or starting a dance party, or creating the universe's first flower petal noodle dance extravaganza. Also, he was the most fucking adorable thing Dre had ever seen in his life. Mr. Zeiga was about as high as Dre's shoulder, his body smooth and sleek. He was also purple. Actually, goddamn purple. After meeting Triss, no, Mr. Zeiga, Dre had gone home to his quarters and stroked off because look at him. Cleaned himself up in disgust, and then searched for as much information as he could find on the Galloway. There was very little known about them. The planet of Gaul was xenophobic in the extreme. What little was known about the Galloway had been gathered via very limited remote trade relations, and the 100 or so exiles who fled their planet for a life in the stars. Those exiles were remarkably close-mouthed. What Dre managed to find out was that the Galloway had 5 genders. 5. Pictures of other exiles showed all Galloway had the same heart-shaped faces, big, rounder-than-human eyes, sweet smiles with pointed teeth, and large, pointed ears. Basically, grape-flavored, super-hot elves with sea anemone hair. Dre was a devout scuba diver, had a horrible sweet tooth, and his favorite flavor was grape. Of course, since Dre was wildly attracted to Mr. Zeiga, dealing with him on a professional basis was that much more challenging. So Dre defaulted to stiff and grumpy. Mr. Zeiga only ever gave Dre the same open, friendly treatment he gave everyone, which annoyed Dre further, because more than anything else, he would like to be special to this man, to be treated differently. But Triss was Galloway, notoriously promiscuous. That was in all the files because it might cause an international incident. Dre, on the other hand, knew himself well enough to identify as quite gay, quite monogamous, and probably too domineering and possessive for most modern human men, let alone a Galloway. Which is why he was left merely imagining what lavender skin tasted like, forcing his attraction to convert to annoyance whenever he ran into Mr. Zeiga. Of course, they lived in the same zone. Of course, it would be Mr. Zeiga causing a commotion at the ramen stand. Of course, Dre would be the only security officer around to deal with it.
Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features Threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101 Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last minute holiday hostess gift. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today is the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it, and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me in my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with multiple New York Times bestseller author, Gail Carriger. And before the break, we heard a clip from her novel, The Fifth Gender. One of my favorite quotes from that section, Gail, is when one of the characters said he was wondering what lavender skin tastes like. And so speaking of tasting lavender skin, I want to break down what's going on in this world, because as I said, the Galloway people from Planet Gal have five different genders. Can you just tell us briefly what those genders are?
Essentially, there are, it started as a thought experiment. And so essentially it is a biologically based gender. And that's part of the discussion that I'm engaging with the book, is how and why you don't associate gender and biological sex. But essentially they divide themselves into a female gender that can produce children, that can carry babies inside, a male gender that can do that. In other words, they have a vestigial penis, so they look masculine on the outside, but they have an internal womb set up. And then there are, so those two are called the loja. And then there are isiga. And so the loja just carry very small fetal, so there's no carrying to term for them. It's kind of like a Joey for kangaroo species. So you carry a very small fetus, and then it's birthed out quite small, and then it's given to the isica, who have a pocket, rather like kangaroos again. And they are the child rearers, so they are actually the largest, and there are male and female variants of isica as well. And those two are like the biggest physically. They're defensive, they're protective, all of that sort of a thing. And they raise children, or they're supposed to, by the protocols of society, and then in sort of creche arrangements. And then there is a male gender who are the sperm contributors, and there's just the one, and that's the antiga. And so that's essentially, like, it's difficult to articulate using
binary
genders.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, those are the three.
I mean, but what I want... I want people to know that there is hot human alien sex in this book.
There is, absolutely. It is very explicit. And
very explicit. And it sort of resembles, but is not exactly like, two men having sex.
Yes.
Because there are two phalluses.
Yes. There are two cocks in play, shall we say.
There are two cocks in play. And so there's this hot human alien sex, and then there's a few other things that differ about the alien's body.
Yes.
Including their hair is,
it's quasi prehensile, and it's emotive.
It, like, moves around, and it could also, like, wrap around something and be sensual, and is also, like, has receptors in a way that our hair doesn't.
So it has a sort of noodle like texture and capacity, thick noodles, and it is, there's a little bit of, you know, hentai tentacle-ness going on. And I specifically wrote this book with an explicit aspect to it because I knew if I'm presenting an alien race with five genders that human curiosity is going to want to follow them into the bedroom. It's just the way we are. And I was like, I do have, like you mentioned at the beginning, I have young adult books, and of course they're very low, steam to none. And then I have most of my steampunk stuff in the mainstream series is pretty sweet. It's pretty low. We sort of close the bedroom door gently most of the time. Mm-hmm. But I also write explicit, and I do that intentionally. I actually have a whole rant, which is like why we need to write sexy. That I did as a blog post. But
let's go into that. Why do we have to write sex?
Because I feel like fiction has a responsibility. First of all fiction has inherent messages in it, and I don't think we as authors can, like, you have to acknowledge that your opinions and your feelings and your stance on things is going to express itself in your work, whether you like it or not. And sometimes you do that kind of biasing unintentionally. That's a complete a different event. But for sexy stuff, I feel compelled as a fiction author to be kind of a bastion of culture in terms of normalization and acceptance. Partly doing that is being like, here are some awesome ways to have sex, and here are some aberrant, and here are some interesting, and here are some exciting. And part of that is because as a writer, I'm relatively mainstream within the genre universe. And so I like, it's my responsibility to take the squick out of lots of different types of sex and to make it fun and enjoyable and happy. So that when the mom who has read all of my books comes to me and says, you know, like, my daughter came out to me and I was fine with it because you wrote Madame LeFou, who's a genderqueer character. And when my daughter, like, came to me with that, I was like, oh, I know what that means. And I know what that is. You know, admittedly, I know that in the context of a steampunk universe, but that's the kind of magic that fiction has and fiction can do, is it can present, especially something like I write, which is fun and comedic in general, which is to be like, look, here are these other ways, and they're not scandalous or dangerous or scary. They're loving and wonderful and fun, both to people who need to see that because they need a model of it, and people who need to see it because they will be encountering it in their lives with others. So there's my, and that includes sex. And like, I'm like, I always, you know, say things like, there's always consent or some address of consent within the context of, you know, sci-fi, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I model and show ways in which consent can be sexy, for example, and ways in which women should be taught to and should see in the fiction that they enjoy women having agency in their own sexual encounters and asking for what they want and not expecting their, you know, male partners in particular to read their minds, or partners in general to read their minds, like expressing yourself in sex and like talking about what you need and examining your own feelings. So, you know, I have a lot of that stuff that just leaks into my books organically because it's part of my core belief system, but also I hope helps to show there are alternate models to general societal expectations. For example, I write my gay werewolf series, I write a lot of physically large, physically aggressive men who are switches or bottoms or, you know, that kind of like, so I'm very interested in how kink plays into this as well.
And I read something you wrote, which was that science fiction is eager to embrace a future with advanced technology, but frankly poor at conceiving how culture might change.
Absolutely.
So that's another thing that you're interested in exploring, not just in this book, but in others.
Yes.
Which is how might, you know, society look? In this case, how might reproduction and sexuality look? And is that like a theme in your other work?
It comes into the, I have a series called the San Andreas series, which is about supernaturals in the Bay Area, which essentially is where the aberrant supernaturals and queer and crazy supernaturals have all come in order to be part of the craziness that is San Francisco. Basically, everybody comes here. And so I explore it in that a bit more, less in my stuff that is set in the past, my steampunk stuff. But it's definitely, so I, unlike you, was raised in the science fiction fantasy world, and that was mostly what I've read my whole life. And I was very late to get into science fiction, partly because it tended to be very masculine back in the day, but also, you know, with only a dude main character. And I do mean dude. But also because of this very thing, which is even the great masters of sci-fi, like Heinlein is a classic example, were really, really great and envisioning how the tech might evolve and how, you know, we might augment our bodies or what have you, but really bad at thinking that, oh, you know, perhaps the dynamic of male-female might change. Mm-hmm. Or they couldn't conceive of that. But that's really what interests me about a thought experiment about the future. And this is probably because I am an archaeologist, which in the United States, you're part of anthropology, which means taking a lot of cultural anthropology and stuff like that. So I've always been interested specifically in, you know, gender and sexuality under the context of ancient cultures. So I do, that does in fact come in. I have a character in my most recent series who's Aravani, which is like the Hira of India, different, but like that. Which is essentially a conceived third gender in the Middle East of a long, long time ago. But muddle with it, and I am interested in it kind of as an author and in expressing it. But specifically, I think this is the joy of science fiction, is being able to really push the boundaries and examine questions that we are tackling with now under the context of, say, five genders in an alien race, because this is science fiction and you can do that.
I mean, isn't that fascinating that people can imagine aspects of entirely new worlds, but they can't get out of the gender binary?
It's crazy to think about. It's really like I love looking at like 1950s images of the future, you know, where they'll do like the household of the future, and there is the 1950s housewife with her 1950s hairstyle and her 1950s dress, but like with all of these household gadgets, right? And you're just like, wow, that is amazing that you could go so far but just be so narrow and limited and such a, yeah.
Well, it also, part of what you're imagining too, kind of lines up with the kind of Margaret Atwood Handmaid's Tale, which is the way that we have and rear children would shift in
yes.
a new world. And it wouldn't be necessarily tied to gender or romantic relationships. It reminds me of, I'm trying to think of the book. Oh, there's a good book out there, which is about surrogacy.
Oh, interesting.
It was just written, and it was about how, like, in the future, we can only have surrogates, that women are not going to have their own babies. They're
wow.
going Yeah. And it's sort of cultural criticism. And I'm going to think of it later and make Raymond tweet it. But this notion that, like, that these things are going to shift, and And that's actually going to affect like the entire society. Whereas
Absolutely.
Some of these other worlds, if you can't shift gender, you're still kind of stuck.
Yeah. And that's like part of what I'm doing is I'm not, so Tristal is an alien on basically a human run space station. So the social mores of the station are human, but they're future human. And so I'm examining both that side of the equation, the future human, and the Galloy as the alien five gendered race, and how they interact with each other and how they're different from each other. And I'm not glorifying or holding one up as having, you know, being superior or having like all the right answers, or it's just, it's an opportunity for me kind of as a fiction writer to explore not only how we might evolve with respect to household and family dynamics and child rearing and gender and sexual interaction, but how a completely alien race might have formed from the ground up a completely different system, and then the meeting of those two. And there are some other aliens as well, and they clearly have other different forms of family and gender and interrelationships. So like there's a race called the Doreen, and that's just me being like, look, here's a family unit, here's a different kind of family unit. Like how unlimited can we be in our conception of that? But that's definitely like the book, and this might be giving a little bit away, has quite a bit to do with children, because Tristal is a member of the Loggia, this fifth gender, which are males who are supposed to biologically bear children, and his choices and decisions around that is basically what guides both his whole life and comes into play with the mystery that the Galloy bring to them, and that also has to do with like, of course, my own personal choices. I'm child-free by choice. I've never wanted children. And it's always been something that I've sort of grappled in, like, is there something wrong with me? Why? Like, why do we particularly, like, vilify and pursue women who don't want children and yet allow people who probably shouldn't have children just to have as many as they want?
Right,
you know, like,
right.
So there are, like, questions with that. The Galloy I set up as a race that is struggling to contain itself. So they're dying out. They're not breeding enough to fulfill their numbers. Whereas humans are set up as very good at procreating, right? There's a reason we colonize the galaxy. We're basically like great little fuck bunnies. So go humans. And everybody sort of mildly admires this about us. They're like, these strange, you know, brown tinged, mostly hairless creatures that just like have managed to procreate like crazy, you know?
Okay. Oh, and I just remembered the book, so I want to tell people. The book is called Full Surrogacy Now, Feminism Against Family. It's by Sophie Lewis, so everyone should check that out. I think what's really interesting about the book, because for me, I'm going into it as not a fan necessarily of sci-fi, but you're grappling with all of these questions that certainly are front and center in my mind. And you complicate it further by the fact that the race that has five genders is really problematic also.
Yes. Yeah. They have issues and yeah, definitely.
But and so there's no sort of utopian thing to like hang on to.
No, I don't set up anyone as a model of perfection. Like, unfortunately, I don't write a utopian future where we've solved all of our problems, because from a writer perspective, that's not going to be particularly interesting to write about. It's not dystopian by any stretch of the imagination, but it's also not utopian. neither the space station nor the Galloy who come in with their spaceship.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today, and I hope all of you sci-fi fans out there and non-fans will check out The Fifth Gender.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I will say that in conjunction with the book, for those of you who are maybe interested in the nonfiction side of the equation, if you just Google my name and gender fluidity, a couple of blog posts I did include like other fiction reading. If sci-fi is not your jam, there's like contemporary romance or whatever else you might try. And also I have a whole list of resources that I used when I was researching this that include like great blogger trends and like cross-dressing bloggers and like anything that I could come up with that I thought was really helpful. So if you're more interested in something that's nonfiction. Those I like took some time to put those resources up there as well. But of course, I appreciate it if you read the book. But just so you know, there's other stuff.
You can find that on her site at gailcarriger.com. It's C-A-R-R-I-G-E-R. She is Gail Carriger on Twitter and Instagram and Gail Carriger LLC on Facebook. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you again for reading my book. I'm truly honored.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to someone who's been on the show before, but not in quite some time. It's Dr. Kit Stubbs from the Effing Foundation for Sex Positivity. So stay with us.
Lately, it seems like everyone is talking about self-care. Well, taking care of your body and mind is important. For me, maintaining a sexual relationship with myself is part of my self-care routine. I love mixing it up, and I like a little inspiration on that front. Sometimes holding the phone to watch something just doesn't work for me. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories to inspire and arouse. This isn't like an audiobook. It's more like hearing someone tell you the details of an escapade or listening in on an actual sex scene. It's pretty immersive that way. It's like having someone right in your earbuds. The stories are high quality, they're well produced, and they're all original. I like it because you can select from different categories. Hello, BDSM. And you can get a flavor of each one from the descriptions. You can choose men with women, women with women, and they're growing their men with men selections. Start one, then jump to another if that one's not for you. The majority are about 10 minutes long. And for you, my listeners, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. That's right. Get your first 30 days free when you go to dipsystories.com/Tristan. dipsystories.com/Tristan. Then call me and tell me what your favorites are. Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features Threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101, Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last-minute holiday hostess gift. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, Level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to give a shout out to my fantastic sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. They make all things possible, including this show.
Go to pleasurechest.com. You can click on events to see what kind of free sex ed events they're having in their store locations. You can also do a little shopping. And if you buy something, use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and get a free massage candle. So in putting together this show, I was trying to figure out what's a good companion guest to Gail Carriger. And I think the first line of my guest's bio kind of says it all. So I'm just going to read it, okay? Dr. Kit Stubbs is a non-binary queer femme maker and entrepreneur who's more interested in people than in tech. After earning their PhD in robotics from Carnegie Mellon University, Kit is now the founder and executive director of the Effing Foundation for Sex Positivity, a 501(c) nonprofit whose mission is to normalize conversations about sex. Since 2017, the Effing Foundation has awarded over $100,000 in grants to sex-positive artists and educators across the United States. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Kit.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we were just talking with Gail Carriger, who's a science fiction fantasy writer, who was talking about creating these sort of futuristic worlds where she feels like lots of her peers are talking about the new technologies we'll all be living with. But she's actually more interested in talking about gender, sexuality, parenting, the family. So I think she's more interested in people than in tech also.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah, I mean, for me, like people are what's really important. People are interesting and important. And so, yeah, that's absolutely where my energy goes.
So tell me about the mission of the foundation. I mean, before that, let me just say, there are so few, if any, foundations and nonprofits that give money to anyone who talks about sex in any way. It's just the fact of the world. And so the Effing Foundation is, in fact, unique. And tell me more about its mission.
So, you know, we want to do a lot of the things that, you know, that you're doing, right? Have conversations about sex. We want to foster those conversations. We want that to be just a normal thing, right? We want people to be able to express themselves with respect to their sexuality. So, you know, how do we normalize these conversations? How do we, you know, foster this kind of sex positive environment that we want? And for us, we do that through making grants to artists and educators who are out there like on the ground creating awesome sex positive resources of all kinds. And yeah, that's our mission. Like if we want, I realized sort of as I got into sex positivity and activism, it was like, oh, you know, what is it going to take to change the world? And it turns out the one thing is super helpful is money. It is not all you need, but it's really important. And as you said, like I have yet to find, you know, we try to be an organization that will fund the type of work that no, literally nobody else will fund. So yeah, we fund a very wide range of projects all across the country.
Give me an idea of who some of your grantees are. Can you tell me about one of them?
Oh my goodness. It is really hard to pick one. We now have 20 at this point. We are currently working to select our new grant candidates for 2019-2020. Oh, geez. If I had to pick one off the top of my head, maybe I would say the Black Trans Prayer Book. That is a really cool project. It's an anthology co-edited by J. Mace III and Lady Dane Figueroa Adidi. They have a group of amazing Black trans contributors who are writing a book that celebrates celebrates their lives as Black trans people, including their own spirituality, their sexuality, kind of claiming a radical theology that's honest about the fact that trans people have high rates of sexual violence, that trans people engage in sex work at higher rates than the cis population, and all those things. So we wanted to celebrate them and support their projects. So that's just one, but there's so many.
Okay, so this leads me to my next question, which is that recently there was a conversation
on my social media feed where people were talking about sort of prioritizing people of color and other marginalized folks over white people. And of course, white people got mad about that, as white people are wont to do. But then someone replied, hey, you should look at the Effing Foundation and how they frame what their priorities are. So tell me about that. Do you have an actual process by which you do prioritize marginalized folks in like when you accept applications and who's more likely to get one?
So our value, so as a foundation, we value equity, which means that we try to be mindful that we are providing more resources to folks who have potentially multiple marginalized identities. So we have a number of demographic goals that we are striving to meet every year with the grants that we fund. So there's a whole page on the website about this. So like right now, we make sure that 60% of our dollars go to projects that are led by teams who are all people of color. 30% of our dollars go to projects who are led by all like trans, non-binary, genderqueer, two-spirit, et cetera, folks. We have demographic goals around making sure we've got representation for queer folks, folks with various kinds of disabilities. And so as we look at applications, like that's something we consider. We decided that no more than 20% of our dollars would go to all white-led projects. You know, for us, we believe that in order to make the kind of impact we want to make, like those are the choices that we've made. And so as we, you know, get our grant applications in, we sort of take a look at sort of, well, who do we have? You know, who is sort of floating to the top, like that our advisory council is excited about? Who are we excited about? You know, and how can we put together a set of potential grantees that will also sort of honor our values around meeting these demographic goals?
And where does most of your money come from? Is it just direct fundraising?
Yeah, so we are mostly supported by individual donors, and we're now starting to investigate some corporate sponsorships as well. But to date, it's mostly been individual donors. Well, you know, I took the name Effing Foundation because naming things is hard, and I couldn't honestly, after like a year, come up with anything I liked better. Unlike many foundations, we are sadly not sitting on top of a huge pile of money. Mm-hmm. We basically every year do this fundraising to raise the funds that we need to support a new group of grantees.
Wow. I mean, it's intense because there, you know, the nonprofit organization world has turned into its sort of own industrial complex in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I was just, you know, hearing lately, I don't know what the statistic was about a certain national breast cancer foundation where if you gave them $20, like 17 of it would go to paying their costs, their overhead, their executive director, which, you know, for people who are donating in smaller amounts, that feels significant to me. I don't want $3 to go to an actual person with breast cancer or research on breast cancer and the rest to go to like galas and pink hats or bows or whatever it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tricky because we do believe that everyone should be paid fairly for their work, right? So that includes our grantees. So we'll cover, you know, if an artist says, hey, I can't do this work unless I get a stipend so I can take time off of my other paying gigs to do this cool sex positive work, you know, we fund that. So, you know, we are definitely lean and mean. We do want to get, you know, we want to make sure that our people running the foundation, that we're paid, you know, fairly for our time, not excessively, you know. Yeah, it's tough, but you know, so it's like we sort of there are now some nonprofits, especially run by marginalized folks, where it's like, well, we want to move the conversation away from overhead because that really penalizes smaller nonprofits. nonprofits run by like people of color, where it's like, well, if you want us to continue doing the work, we have to be able to pay our staff, you know, something. And so we try to be mindful of that. Like, definitely the bulk of what we're raising goes directly out to grantees, and it will go for literally whatever they need to get the work done. Our hope is that, like, in order to be sustainable, we're trying to broaden our donor base, and we want to make sure that, like, yeah, we'll be able to pay a couple of staff to be able to do this full time. It's a lot of administration work to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. But yeah, mostly we're just focused on getting as much funds out to our grantees as we can, and letting them use those funds for whatever they need to get that work done.
And are there specific communities that you are doing outreach to in this grant cycle? Folks you haven't seen apply that you would love to see sort of come across your desk?
Yeah, so this year we added a couple of special topics. In particular, we're looking to fund work by asexual folks. We believe that asexual folks are absolutely included in the sex positive community. We respect ACEs and ACE spectrum folks of all kinds. So we're excited. We've got a couple of good proposals from asexual activists coming through. Intersex activists, we're also looking to support this time around. In particular, that's not something we funded in the past, and this time we were particularly looking for it. Some of our other topics were religion and spirituality and sex positivity, which again is, I think, a topic we don't hear a lot about, and there are folks doing cool work in that area. This year, I also expect we'll be funding at least one or two projects that are centering sex workers and their activism and identity as well.
Again, another group that isn't likely to get grants from other organizations. And sometimes that's also about the work that they do and like the bylaws of the organization and people saying we can't support people who may be doing work that is criminalized. But certainly it also sounds like you're right on the edge of what's going on right now in sex positivity as we know it, right? These are the groups that are sort of gaining momentum, that there's more mainstream dialogue about, and that some mainstream folks are sort of just waking up to the fact of their existence and their visibility, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, definitely the work of, say, intersex activists like Pigeon, people are starting to become more aware, like, oh, this is a thing. Intersex people are real. They exist. They have full lives. You know, how can we support them? And so, you know, we're trying to, you know, it's tough. I wish we could fund, like, we get so many amazing proposals. You know, it's like, I tell people every day, like, I wish I could fund, like, almost all of them. We get so many amazing proposals. But we're really trying to cover kind of a broad spectrum. We're trying to be very mindful, like, what are groups, you know, we haven't funded in the past that we need to make sure we're including. You know, we try to make sure we're funding kink positive projects, non-monogamy centered projects, all these kinds of things. You know, what I tell people is like, okay, you know, not every project we fund is going to be for you, but hopefully there will be at least one or two projects that really speak to you. That's, I think, what we're really going for.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so we should probably tell people how to give you money. Let's do that, okay?
Yes, please.
They can go to the website, effing.org, and that's spelled EFFING. You're also on Twitter at effingfound. And on Facebook at Effing Foundation. And so this holiday season, which is literally right around the corner, instead of giving gifts, you may want to give donations in honor of the people that you love, right?
Yes, absolutely. If you've got a friend or a sweetie who's sex positive and you appreciate them, helping support the Effing Foundation is one way to show that you recognize them, you're celebrating them, you're celebrating their identity. And it's going to help a bunch of amazing artists and educators at the same time.
Thank you again for coming on the show and for all the work you do, which really provides amazing resources to the community.
Thank you again for having me.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. My guest is going to be the doyenne of senior sex, Joan Price. She's going to be talking about two new projects, her book, Sex After Grief, Navigating Your Sexuality After Losing Your Beloved, and a movie she collaborated with Jessica Drake on called The Wicked Guide to Sex, Senior Sex. So we'll be talking about that next week. And until then, you can find me on all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino. You can find the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.